Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand. Marketing tools that get your products out there, and that's just the beginning. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you. Shopify, your all-in-one commerce platform.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com.au/listen.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Coming up, how businesses are dealing with inflation, the war continues, and SpaceX targeting Australian investors. All of that and more next. Hi everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Tuesday, the 26th of May 2026, a day where the Australian share market fell, the S&P ASX 200 down 0.4%. We'll have the details soon with Raz Bouyan from Wavestone Capital, including his interesting thoughts about the hype surrounding space, the space economy, and Elon Musk's upcoming SpaceX IPO. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. We go into more detail of the top consumer and finance market news stories covered during On The Money on SBS World News. But first, 72% of Australian businesses have been negatively impacted by fuel prices and supply availability. That's according to a new survey of nearly 2,000 businesses by the Australian Bureau of Statistics ahead of official inflation data out tomorrow. But despite that, only 48% say they absorbed the cost of higher fuel prices, 11% increased prices, while 6% implemented a fuel surcharge or levy. So, to check the pulse of businesses, both large and small, I spoke with Business New South Wales Executive Director David Borger. David, so the ABS survey shows that 72% of Aussie businesses say fuel prices and supply availability have impacted them negatively. Does this surprise you? And what are your stakeholders saying about the impact it's having on overall conditions and sentiment?
Yeah, look, it's not surprising at all, Richard. I mean, we're picking up every day from members across the state, particularly in Western Sydney, that the impact of the Strait of Hormuz closure, the impact of high fuel prices is affecting every part of their business. It's affecting them in terms of additional fuel costs, but also when they're buying supplies. Some of them are finding that there are imposts being put on deliveries that were never there before. And so how do they actually pay for that? And most of them, frankly, are just taking a hit to the bottom line. They're trying to absorb the cost themselves. They can do that for a little while. They can pass some on to customers, but not all. But if it keeps on going, then ultimately some of them will face solvency questions. And I think that they're sort of the canaries in the coal mine at the moment.
That's quite interesting. And that's the most important thing of the survey that I think I found is that 48% of these businesses say they've absorbed the cost increases, only 11% increased prices, and 6% implemented a fuel surcharge or a levy. Are your stakeholders also seeing this? And if they are not increasing consumer prices at the moment, what's that a sign of? A sign that they can't afford to lose customers in a tight economic environment, for example?
Yeah, but I think the gloomy thing is we're seeing that another way that they're absorbing costs is by reducing their own expenditure, so reducing investment in their business itself. Over the long term, that will reduce productivity, but it's also this kind of doom spiral that the economy can get into when consumers spend less, businesses spend less on investment, and frankly, the economy shrinks. So that's the challenge. And a lot of these indicators that we see are lag indicators. It may be that we are effectively already in a recession. We just don't know it yet.
How long do you think businesses can put off not increasing prices? And is there some sort of tipping point?
Well, I think those that can increase prices are trying to do so every day. This is a dynamic thing, but there's a limit to how much they can do that, because if they increase prices too much, then consumption goes down, expenditure goes down, revenue goes down. So they have to try and hit that sweet spot, of the price mechanism, where they can sort of maximize it. And I think they're being pushed and pulled from every direction at the moment. So, I think we are in a challenging place in the economy. I mean, there's some evidence to suggest since the fuel excise subsidy has been implemented that things are slightly better. But, you know, I think that, you know, no one thinks that Donald Trump is going to pull us out of this crisis any day soon. No one quite knows when it's going to end. But the supply chain impacts are likely to have a very long tail on them.
The share market's acting like it's going to happen sometime soon, but that's another story. And while I've got you, it's been 2 weeks since the federal government's budget tax reform, so those big CGT changes. What's your view on the implication for business?
Yeah, look, I think the budget this year, most people would say, was a very unusual budget. It was a historic budget in terms of major changes to tax settings, lots of different changes to tax settings around capital gains tax and negative gearing, some of which won't come into effect for a little while. But look, I think the messaging from Treasury probably hasn't been clear. They're still communicating and consulting. There's still this big issue about startups and whether CGT rules will apply to them. I think we've got to also remember that startups are frankly every type of business. It's not all, tech hipsters living in Ultimo and Sydney. Startups are every small business that's trying to make a buck with an idea and something they can actually bring uniquely to that business. And they're all thinking at some point, if it goes well, if I put my heart and soul and often my family into this, then there's a payday, and that payday is now changed, and they're trying to calculate what that means for them.
That's Business New South Wales Executive Director David Borgia there. Let's take a closer look at the Australian share market today. The market's continuing to seesaw as investors react to any piece of news coming out of the Middle East. The 200 down 0.4% as the US launched strikes in Iran, dampening some optimism of an imminent deal to end the conflict. 9 of the 11 sectors finished in the red. Utilities and energy the worst. Market operator ASX smashed down nearly 12.5%. It warned its cost base and capital spending could rise by 20% because of further investment in technology. For his take on everything impacting the market today, plus his thoughts on the space economy hype, I spoke with Raz Buyan, portfolio manager at Wavestone Capital. So Raz, one day Donald Trump says he's close to a deal with Iran. The next, there's defensive strikes on Iranian sites. Does the market really believe there's an imminent end to the conflict, or have investors been a bit too optimistic?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I would go back. I mean, as a fundamental investor, we look at like earnings, right? So if you look at the US market, the first quarter earnings just shot the lights out. And so the earnings and like outlook for the US companies in particular have been quite strong, obviously led by all the kind of AI companies. You know, you think about, Alphabet, you think about Nvidia, all the big Amazon, they've all reported really strong earnings. So I think that the market's kind of taken that as a sign of confidence that we will get through it. Remembering that historically, if you look at the long range charts of markets, like wars are kind of a pause. And I think the market as a result is willing to look through it. At the same time, I guess there are winners and losers from the war. So on one hand, the US, following the shale revolution, they are energy sufficient in a way. Whereas countries like India and Europe, to some extent, you know, they're large importers of energy. So the Indian kind of economy is hurting as a lot of the other economies. And we've experienced shortages of fuel, for instance, in Australia. So I think everyone's had a different impact. But the US, which really drives markets, has actually been through quite an interesting phase from the CapEx boom that we're seeing in AI. But having said all of that, I think the risk for markets now, given how bubbly everything is if you do get this persist for a little longer and the war doesn't end, then we start to see, you get a growth shock really for the rest of the economy. And I think that's what people should think about going forward, because 3 months in, and yes, there's a tweet every other day, but the reality is that, it's much more complex than that in terms of some of the issues that kind of have emerged out of the Iran conflict.
We'll know tomorrow with the official CPI figures about how this conflict is flowing through to consumer prices. But to what extent are investors pricing in interest rate hikes now, not just here, but globally as a result of the war and the impact on inflation?
Yeah, that's multifaceted too. I mean, obviously Australia's had, we went from, if you go back 6 months ago, we were going to have these rate cuts, in Australia, and now we are getting rate hikes. I think and I'll talk about Australia separately to the globe. I think there are a few other issues obviously going through. We've got this massive CapEx cycle. You've got short term, you've got inflation, and longer run, you know, you think most of the governments, and Australia is in a good position in that, but most of the other governments are actually quite, the fiscal situation is not great, particularly in places like the UK and stuff, in Japan. So I feel like there's a range of reasons why globally rates are going up. But the other one, which I don't think enough is talked about, is we've got a change in the Federal Reserve chair coming through, and he's espoused his own views of how the Fed should work. So I feel that the earliest we'll get some certainty around rates globally, and particularly in the US, will be on the 17th of June when we get a rate announcement by the Fed. But also after that, you have the press conference. So that's the first time that I think the financial markets will be able to get a sense of where Kevin Warsh sits. Domestically, I think the situation is a bit different. Obviously, the governor was really hawkish in the last meeting with the 25 basis point hike, and the markets were pricing in not just one, but two more hikes this year. But subsequently, we've obviously had the labor market data last week with the unemployment rate going up. So that's kind of had a meaningful impact on the rate outlook. So now there's just a little over a rate hike this year. But if you think about, you add all the uncertainty that the budget has brought through with the CGT changes and negative gearing, the sense is that I think we are close to the top, is my personal opinion, because I think Australia is a very, like 70% of the economy is consumer. The consumer is very linked to household wealth. Household wealth is linked to house prices. So if house prices kind of roll over or don't go up, credit growth will slow. So I'm actually quite less hawkish than the market kind of will think. In the short term, I think you've got the issue around, you know, the spot inflation number, given where fuel prices are. Having said that, like, the fuel prices have actually come off because of the subsidies. So net-net, I'm less. I think the sticker shock of the CPI number will be there, but I think the RBA has flagged that the spot inflation number is going to be higher. So I think, you know, if you listen to what she said at the last conference, she was happy to look through for a little bit, having kind of raised rates the last time, but in the context of where the budget is, and if you get a lot of these kind of policies approved, I think that there is a bit of space for the domestic economy.
You mentioned the federal budget there. You've had 2 weeks to kind of look through the implications, even though nothing's absolutely set in stone. But the CGT changes, do you see them affecting the share market in any way? As you mentioned, a lot of it's hinged to the property market, investor loans, that's connected to bank shares. But, you know, if investors aren't going to be looking at the property market, could they potentially be looking at the equity market?
Yes and no, as you point out, like a lot of this stuff, I think there's a lot of discussion around. Everyone's got a very strong opinion. The truth is that, you know, the negative gearing and the CGT changes will impact the property market, negative gearing more than anything else, in my view. But if you don't get property prices increasing, then I suspect people will look for other avenues to kind of park their savings. And I suspect what you'll probably see is people going more into direct commercial property and stuff, which I suspect is likely to happen. But in terms of the equity market, to be honest, obviously, if you think about the Aussie market, close to 65% of the market is now banks and resources. And banks are incredibly well priced, particularly if you're going into a slowing housing market where credit growth kind of slows. I think it plays to the way we invest, which is looking for good Australian companies that have gone overseas and done well. And yes, that's been really tough for a lot of the growth companies that we've invested in. But once hopefully the war ends, and I think in our view, the US is in a better shape than the rest of the world because their energy sufficiency, because of all the spend that we're seeing on AI. So chances are that the marginal dollar will go into companies that are exposed to the US, I think. So I'm talking about companies like Macquarie Bank, ResMed, CarSales, all of these, BlueScope Steel, they've all got good franchises, good operating business in the US. So I suspect you'll see that move away because the domestic economy is probably going to be a bit weaker.
Join us this National Reconciliation Week from the 27th of May to the 3rd of June, and let's all be all in for reconciliation. Visit reconciliation.org.au to find out more. Authorised by Reconciliation Australia Limited, Sydney.
If bullying is affecting you or someone you love, Dolly's Dream is here to provide professional understanding and support. Call 13Dolly for confidential help for kids, young people and parents dealing with bullying. You're not alone.
That's Wavestone Capital Portfolio Manager Raz Bouyan. He spoke to me about a lot more, including about SpaceX today. Today, CommSec emailed its clients to advise that it will act as lead Australian retail broker for the proposed SpaceX IPO. It basically means mum and dad investors may be able to get in on the proposed US float of the Elon Musk company. The email prompted clients to sort out a CommSec International shares account. But that platform actually suffered technical difficulties throughout the day. Whether that was because of demand, its owner CommBank wouldn't tell us, but it does speak to the hype the company and the overall space economy is starting to bring. Remember, SpaceX posted a $5 billion loss last year on nearly $19 billion in revenue, but it's eyeing a listing which could value it at $1.75 trillion. That's the largest IPO ever. There has been recent share price gains in some parts of the sector, along with new ETFs, but is all this talk a warning sign? I asked Wavestone's Raz Bouyan.
Yeah, it's interesting you asked that, Ricardo. I did download the prospectus and have a read of it. As I kind of, if you look through the prospectus and the first 10 pages, it got pictures of rockets. The interesting thing with the company is that, you know, it's got one large division, which is obviously doing incredibly well. Most of your viewers would have heard about Starlink, which effectively sells broadband across the world. The good thing about Musk is he goes where no one else dares, and clearly he's done that with rockets, he's done that with Starlink. So I suspect this hype is, as you rightly point out, I think it is hype. Remembering also that AI is a fundamental technology which is obviously going to change the world, and most investors haven't had the luxury of going into becoming investors in OpenAI or in Anthropic, and obviously he's got a business, XAI, which is, you know, is part of this IPO. So if you put the kind of the space, the connectivity, and you put AI, that's like the ultimate combination in a market that's been hyped up for AI. And as I said, it's the first one through. The valuation is, I mean, it's very hard. Like he's talking about a total addressable market of over 28 trillion and broken up into the three divisions that he's got. The point is, though, we are fundamental investors. The revenue, I think, in the first quarter is about $4.5 billion, and it lost about $4.5 billion. So we don't tend to invest in loss-making businesses. So all I do is advise, most of your viewers that there is an incredible amount of hype. And the way this business has been set up to float is that they're giving, to your point about CommSec being part of it, I think they're trying to allocate a lot of the $75 billion or whatever they're raising to retail investors with the hope that once that IPO comes on, then there's a bunch of these passive ETFs which are linked to the NASDAQ 100 that actually buy the stock, so there's more demand. So in the short run, it's more a supply and demand of stock as opposed to what the business actually does. But you never bet against Elon Musk. I mean, if this thing floats and gets the $1.75 trillion sort of valuation, he's going to be our first trillionaire. I would say that the brokers and the bankers who are part of this float also know that there is Anthropic around the corner, and then there's OpenAI. So I think this stuff is all buyer beware. We tend not to participate in floats because of that. But having said all of that, I think it's getting to a crescendo given the hype surrounding artificial intelligence, I think.
And in just wrapping up, you know, given everything we've discussed, what are you telling your clients right now, and where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Yeah, I guess I talked about the philosophy of the way we invest and stuff, and it's been pretty tough because growth companies have sold off because of all the changes that, you know, Trump has made since his administration came into power, and that's impacted a lot of our investments. Having said all of that, like, these are businesses that have got very strong global franchises, and to be honest, I think our clients have been incredibly loyal and believe that this location that we are seeing is temporary, and once we get over the AI hype, and in many ways, I'm waiting for these companies to float and be answerable to markets. Because right now, everyone believes that all the companies that have been successful over the last two decades will be disrupted by AI. We don't think that is the case. I mean, the argument that knowledge is going to be free to us doesn't make sense. So we are waiting for these things to kind of pan out, after which I suspect people will start to go back and look at these franchise businesses. So that's kind of really our message to our clients, particularly when we know that the banks are incredibly overvalued going into a pretty tough period. And then BHP is not $30 anymore, it's $62. Rio is not $80 anymore, it's $170. So it feels like that's where the opportunity is, and that's probably true for retail investors to buy these high-quality franchises. And to be honest, it'll turn out to be, there will be some which won't work out, but by and large, I think these businesses have very good management, they've got good business models, and they've got this massive opportunity set in front of them, which they can kind of deliver over the course of the next 5-10 years.
That's Wavestone Capital's Raz Bouyan speaking with me there earlier. And he wraps up the podcast for this Tuesday. Give it a like, a review if you enjoy it, and subscribe. Don't forget you can watch On The Money during the 6:30 weekday edition of SBS World News on SBS. The podcast returns tomorrow. It drops after the market close every weekday, and I'll catch you then.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only and should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decisions. This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
Join us this National Reconciliation Week from the 27th of May to the 3rd of June, and let's all be all in for reconciliation. Visit reconciliation.org.au to find out more. Authorised by Reconciliation Australia Limited, Sydney.